Hello, friends. I have a wonderful man on my show today named Adel Bigtree. He's the a producer of the Vax movie and the High Wire Report. And he's done so much good work in educating the public, I think, in the United States and around the world on the concerns of vaccines. And Del, I want to thank you so much for coming on my show today. Thank you so much. And
thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I mean, the things I talk about can be somewhat controversial, and you're at risk of having your channel or your radio station shut down. So anyone that's willing to take that risk is worthy of my time.
Well, that's kind of you to say that. I had a near-death experience in 1978 when I was hit head-on by a drunk driver at 110 miles an hour.
Wow.
And I was in the hospital for 6 days. And during that time, I talked to the Creator and angels about the purpose of life and why I'm here. And it's a long story. I went off to become an attorney for about over 20 years. Or during that time, I enjoyed it, but I got tired of criminals asking me to lie, steal, and cheat for them. And yeah. Realized my true calling was actually in the spiritual world, making the world a better place. I was alive in Atlantis 12,500 years ago, and I got the message that you were there too. And at the time, There was a group of military and civilian leaders who were playing with nuclear and crystalline technology, and they ended up destroying much of the planet. Well, history does tend to repeat itself, Del, I think. And so we're all back on stage now for this another episode of the same Shakespearean play. Like Shakespeare said, we are all but actors on a stage in the world. So so I think we're back facing those same issues. But people like you are raising consciousness to make this world a better place. And I think people should be informed of all the factors which go into vaccines and other issues. So I'm glad you're here. And I am, and I'm not afraid of anybody or anything for telling the truth.
You certainly are not, and I just want to say for the record that I did grow up with discussions about Atlantis and Leviathan and those things. They still sit in a place of mythology for me, but I accept that you take a more direct route to it, and I look at all things, but for people that are listening, I just want to say that I stick with what I can prove, and right now I cannot prove the existence of Atlantis, but I'm fascinated by that concept. But that doesn't mean that we can't do the work, and really, you know, whether or not it's a metaphor, that story, the idea that man becomes so arrogant that he destroys himself, I think the idea is already in many of our religions. You know, I grew up as a Christian, but also if you look at the Old Testament, I think the idea of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil that sits in the middle of Eden, that God says, I've given you everything, just don't eat of that tree. To me, that is that arrogance that's described in the stories also of Atlantis, and that sort of idea that if we really think that we are smarter than our Creator or able to inject changes in our world, our environment, in this case, go and try and kill a bacteria or a virus, I think it's quite short-sighted to think that you're not creating some ripple effect or chaos theory, right? A butterfly flapping its wings maybe is a hurricane on another side of the planet. I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is the control of governments by people with a God complex that believe they see how the world should be. We're right now releasing, as I understand it, genetically modified mosquitoes in Florida. You know, what could possibly go wrong? We're talking about atomizing, you know, metals in our atmosphere to block the sun. What could possibly go wrong? Yeah. We're talking about vaccinating every single person on this planet with a vaccine that killed animals in almost every animal trial for the last 20 years. So these are the types of things that I think are alluded to in the story you referenced.
Right, exactly. Now, I know you used to live in California. And now you're living in Texas. Do you consider yourself a refugee from the great state
I
of
I do.
California? Okay. Tell us
I
about
do.
That
I
can, a little bit.
I have said that. I consider myself a refugee in my own country. Mm-hmm. I believe that California has lost all of its perspective. It is defying a very important document, the Nuremberg Code. And this is a set of laws, really, that were defined by all the free nations that were involved in trying those that were responsible for the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. Simply put, there were 16 doctors that were put on trial, and most of them were hung for crimes against humanity. But when we got to the other side of those trials, we had to ask ourselves a question: how do we avoid something like this from happening again? And so all the free nations in the world signed on to a promise, you know, a set of laws called Nuremberg Code. The very first rule of the Nuremberg Code is informed consent. It's why I named my nonprofit the Informed Consent Action Network. It essentially says that the voluntary submission by a patient is critical, that they make their decisions based on being informed, that no free citizen will ever have a medical procedure, surgery, drug, experiment done on them without their voluntary consent. And that consent can only be made after they've been informed of all of the potential benefits of that procedure or experiment and all the potential side effects. It is a very important rule. It is what has guided the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm, for our medicine for a very long time. And California has now broken the Nuremberg Code with multiple laws, SB 277, which said you cannot put your child in a private or public school without being vaccinated. And then SB 276, which even takes away the rights of, you know, those with autoimmune issues that cannot vaccinate. It's made it harder for them to find a doctor that will help exempt them out. And so for those reasons, I believe that we were entering a state in California where I was no longer considered a free citizen, and neither were my children. When you start talking about forced vaccination laws, that means that you are essentially property of the state. They can treat you like a cow or a goat or, you know, a chicken. I am none of those things. I'm a free citizen in a nation that fought for its freedom and the right to my religious beliefs, the right to free speech, the right to assembly, and certainly the right to medical choice, which may be aligned with my right to free speech or my right to religion. All of those have now collapsed in California, making it one of the most dangerous places to live for someone that believes in freedom. And so I escaped from California and ran with my family to Texas, where their laws are somewhat better.
Well, that's so good, Dale. I'm glad you explained that. I was awoken at 3 o'clock in the morning 2 months ago by 6 U.S. presidents. I'm a psychic, so I talk to the other side all the time.
Okay.
And I'll just briefly tell you this, and I want to ask you a question about it. They wanted me to start a program called Save the Republic. They said that the freedom of speech that we have in this country was being eroded away, that the U.S. Constitution was being watered down, that many of our rights to privacy, for example, were being thrown out the door, and the country was being destroyed by a small group of radicals. They said they didn't work so hard to create the United States, only to be torn down in this century. The presidents came to me was Kennedy, Washington, Jefferson, Teddy Roosevelt, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John Quincy Adams, James Madison came. The whole bunch of them came, and I've been in contact with them ever since. And they appreciate your work, especially, Del, for raising the consciousness and telling people about freedom. Freedom isn't free, I don't think. You have to fight for it. And the United States was fought for it. We here in the United States fought for it back in 1776. And all of the U.S. presidents are quite proud of your work, by the way. This period will pass, I think. Eventually, the truth will win out. And, we will be successful in raising consciousness. During the past 5 years, the pharmaceutical companies have been giving out free flu shots to the American public. And I've heard rumors, and I'd love your comment on this, that many of those shots already contained, they were testing nanobots and microchips in those vaccines, all kinds of things. Some of the vaccines may have even contained the coronavirus because it was patented, for example, about 6 years ago by Bill Gates in 2014. And what do you know of those flu? And many of the people who got the virus already had the flu shot, which opened them up to the coronavirus. What have you heard about that program, by the way?
Well, I mean, I've heard the rumors or what we call conspiracy theories on my show, The High Wire, with Del Bigtree. And anyone can see it. Just go to thehighwire.com. I hear those stories and I investigate those stories. That's what I do. I was a CBS producer for the daytime talk show, The Doctors. I won an Emmy Award for doing medical research and creating television around it. Wow. But I stick to what I can prove. And what that means, sure, from my perspective, even though I use social media as a platform, I still use the same rules that I would use for news on television. And that is, I have to find multiple sources that can prove a point. And to date, I have not seen the sources for nanobots in a vaccine. I have not seen a vaccine that has been taken off the market and taken, you know, and tested. There are some great testing groups right now that are looking at vaccines. I'm trying to think of one out of Corvelva in Italy is making amazing discoveries about incredibly dangerous chemicals and toxins that have never been reported to be in vaccines. They've also discovered that there are vaccines that no longer have the antigen in them anymore, meaning you're being injected with something that can't even stop the illness that's there. But to date, I have not seen a report that talks about nanobots or nanotechnology inside of a vaccine. Do I believe that those things are in development? You have to imagine that they are. There's already been discussions in science magazines about time-released vaccines using, you know, nanobot technology. I personally don't see that they have reached the level of having developed it, but what do I know? I mean, maybe in a lab somewhere, who knows? It's certainly a possibility, and it's a very scary one.
I've interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on my show, as well as Dr. Judy Mikovits, and they have mentioned, I believe Dr. Judy has mentioned, about how in the vaccines themselves, in the MMR vaccine, that they actually use fetal tissue from babies in the vaccine. And if, for example, if it's a little boy, they may be putting, it's a crapshoot as far as the ingredients of the vaccine. And sometimes they get female RNA, DNA, into the vaccine from the fetal tissue, and they put it in the vaccine. God knows why, but they do. And so when that's injected into a little boy, that actually can help rewrite the DNA and RNA in that baby's genetic makeup, making the boy think later in life that he's a girl. And the opposite thing happens too with a girl. With the girls, when a girl's injected with that male DNA, RNA, later in life, she thinks she's a boy. And have you heard about that, that effect, that scientific effect happening with vaccines?
Well, again, I have heard about that discussion, and I know Judy Mikovits very well. She's a brilliant scientist, and science starts out with hypothesis and theory, and there are theories discussing that issue. What is true, and we know for sure, is that we are injecting the DNA of multiple dead babies into our own children and ourselves. In fact, there's a real issue right now being discussed in Australia by some of the clergy there, because the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine is being grown on aborted fetal cell lines. They use lung fibroblasts and things like that. So this is a known fact. We do know that the DNA of these aborted babies is being injected in our children. There's some brilliant science that has actually been done by one of the world's renowned stem cell scientists named Dr. Teresa Deicher. And she looked at the MMR vaccine and took the MMR vaccine and injected it into petri dishes with stem cells. And what she saw was a proliferation, meaning something was mutating those stem cells where they should normally die in that petri dish over a period of time. They actually accelerated their growth, meaning it could lead to issues of cancer. She also has hypotheses and theories that it leads to neurological disorders like autism. What she has essentially proved is that the stem cells will grab these little fragments of the DNA from these dead babies and mutate their own, the stem cell. It will accept that code. If you think of it as a bunch of letters, let's say it grabs ACZ from that dead baby and then makes that a part of the genetic code of the stem cell. This wouldn't be a problem if it was only happening in one of the millions and billions of cells that are running in our body. But when the stem cell mutates itself, that stem cell recreates cells over and over and over again, So if you mutate a stem cell, you can create all sorts of changes. And so I think that's the basis for this theory and hypothesis. And I believe it should be looked at. I think that these are very interesting factors. What happens if the DNA was coming from a female baby and was put and is mutating the stem cells of a male baby or vice versa? There's no science that exists on that. There's no science that Judy Mikovits can point to on that. But this is part of the work that I've been doing. The science needs to take place. We need to have answers to what happens when you mutate DNA. Can it make changes both in your physical body or maybe even your emotional body or your sexual preferences? These are things that are fascinating questions for science. And the truth is we just aren't collecting enough data. The CDC and FDA refuse to investigate the problems that might occur from the mutation of stem cells that could be caused by vaccines. So right now it's a theory. It's interesting. It would be interesting to, you know what the gay, bi, lesbian, transgender community would think about that discussion. Right. I think everybody should be a part of it, but science should never be afraid to ask important and difficult questions.
Well, one of the things I wanted to run by you is this is a topic I don't follow, but I heard about it the other day. In Satanism, their god is called Baphomet, which is a Luciferian god. And that entity is half female and half male. And a friend of mine suggested the other day, and I run it around by you, if their agenda, it may be satanic, there may be satanic forces behind this vaccination movement worldwide. And the only purpose I can think of them trying to change the sex of boys and girls is that they're trying to create little Baphomets with our half half male, half female. And that was one thing that they brought up. So I wanted to run that by you. It's hard to say why, but anyway.
Right. Well, and let's be clear, and it piggybacks on the last question. I do talk to pediatricians a lot. Of course, I'm a medical investigator, and they are talking about many of their children now are asexual, that have no sexual preference at all. Something that, if you talk to pediatricians whose, lineage is pediatricians, their father will say to them, I never saw anything like this. Right. And yet you have multiple cases just in one clinic. So something is affecting the sexuality of our children. Now, it may be vaccines. It may also be the toxic chemicals. We know that BPA, for instance, that's in plastics, affects, how a boy develops. We know certain chemicals change the sex in frogs when it's leaked into rivers. This is known science. Sure. So you're not off base in saying that potentially vaccines have an ability to affect our sexuality. Is it as a plan for, Satanism or Luciferianism? These are topics that I've yet to really dive deep into because, once again, I want people to know when whatever I say, is researched. But I'm certainly willing to speculate what's going on there. And so this conversation, everyone should know, is straight up speculation. But to me, it's more subtle than that, actually. And I grew up, my father's a minister. So I grew up with concepts of good and evil. And I believe that they are very present in the world today. I think of it a little bit differently. I believe that vaccinations and drugs are being developed. I think that when we know that this is happening with the military, for instance, they'll try drugs to see if they can keep a pilot awake for 3 days and sleep for 2 days, just change their metabolic cycles for, known and obvious reasons. But a lot of testing goes on to see how we can influence the body to make a better soldier. You have to imagine that there are drug companies and pharmaceutical companies that, try to think, can we make a better or stronger human being? Perhaps one that is not held back by sexual preference, that can get a job done without being distracted. All of these things, have been written about in science fiction novels for a very long time. And it does appear that that there is a real God complex taking place with these drugs and these vaccine companies. And I think that it's really to try and control the species. I think whether it's for war, which we tend to take all great ideas, whether it was nuclear energy or something like that, and just use it for war, that seems to be. And when we think about viruses and bacteria, yeah, we look at vaccines, but we also develop these things for war. And so there is a chance that, you know, there is a strength that is being sought out through the manipulation of the body for war. But I would say this, to me, the idea of Satan or darkness is really just the absence of God or light.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, I think we're saying the same thing. If you believe it's your right to manipulate the human body, if you believe that, you know, you have the power over the human body and should assert that on another body, to me, you have left, you now believe yourself to be God. You've left the humility that I spoke about in the beginning that we were asked to uphold in the Garden of Eden, which is don't ever think that you are so brilliant or so smart that you can create the way your creator has. For those that want to just see that as a mythological story, I think the story of evolution plays in many of the same ways. You can't unnaturally do what nature does very well. And if you decide that you can, if you think you're more powerful than Mother Nature or more powerful than God or however you see it, then I believe that you technically are then in sort of a metaphorical way working in a satanic mindset, a lack of humility, a loss of light where it's you and you alone making decisions for the world. And I think that that's how I would describe people like Bill Gates right now.
I was just going to ask you about him.
Yeah. I think that, you know, this is a man who I would assume believes in his heart he is doing good. I don't think that, you know, and I've been arguing with a lot of friends about this lately. In fact, in a dinner last night with Mickey Willis, who made Plandemic, and anyone that hasn't seen Plandemic, you should definitely check out that film. But we're all having that conversation. What is really the motivation of these players? And I argue that I think Bill Gates thinks that he is doing good. He thinks that it's his job to reduce the population of the planet, as he has celebrated through multiple speeches. He believes that that reduction in population saves the world. He thinks he can get there through investing in drugs and specifically into vaccines. Now, how a vaccine is going to limit the population, we could argue on what he means there. But I think he sees people as numbers and sees the greater good of the distant future of this earth as his priority and his goal, and is therefore inserting himself into humanity. How we interact, to me, that is a God complex that's extremely, extremely dangerous.
Interesting, interesting. I'm not going to go too far afield with this. I want to stick to the topics of vaccines now, but I've been in touch with, I'm a psychic, I've been a psychic for over 25 years, and I do communicate with telepathically with benevolent extraterrestrials. And what they've told me, I'm not going to go far into this at all, just a little footnote for you, Dale, to help
I'm understand. Always fascinated. This is interesting. I mean, it's
okay.
I'm interested.
So you can help my listeners and understand and yourself understand where Mr. Gates may be coming from. There are two groups of extraterrestrials who visit planet Earth. One's good, one's bad. One's service to others and based upon love and harmony. The other one's service to self based upon negativity and war. And since 1954, the U.S. government's been involved with a group of negative aliens called the Reptilians. It's a long story how they got started. They came here in March of 54, offered Eisenhower technology to fight the Soviets at the time. Eisenhower was forced into accepting their offer. And since that time, we've had nothing but war, so the latter part of the 20th century into this one. And in 22 other star systems, this group called the Reptilians have come to planets like Earth, offered the elite certain benefits for in exchange for reducing the population of their planet by 90 to 95%. And after which time they extract everything, they create a small manageable slave-like population and then destroy the entire planet. That was their plan for planet Earth. And I believe, in just my humble opinion, that Mr. Gates is part of that plan to reduce the population, not for the benefit of humanity, because I don't think there's too many people on the planet, but rather for the benefit of these negative forces. And I think you have to, follow the money with Mr. Gates. He's behind the vaccines, of course, and pushing it very hard. But I think people, I know people, and I appreciate you so much, Del, for raising these issues, because I think people need to ask, why is it so forced upon the American public? Why can't we vote on it? Why can't we have a detailed scientific investigation as to what's in our vaccines? I know a lot of legislation has been forced through government in my own state of Washington State. We have a governor here who's very pro-vaccine. He was funded by Pfizer and the pharmaceutical companies in his gubernatorial races here. But people, I mean, for the sake of their children and their own benefits, they need to look at these issues. And when you say that many say that children are losing their sexual preference, or boys think that they're girls, or girls think that they're boys, what that does is ultimate population control, because if people aren't interested in sex, if they don't know what sex they are, they lose interest in sex, guess what? They're not going to have kids. And the birth rates are already falling in many Western countries as it is. And so I think this is part of this trend to reduce this population by war, pestilence, vaccines, you name it. And I think there's a greater plan behind it. So anyway, that's just my opinion. And I wanted to share that with you briefly. So.
Thank you. It's very interesting. I think I stay focused on what I see happening, and sure. And the why gets much more elusive. And so that's a fascinating perspective.
Yeah.
But you're right. We're watching for whatever the reason, we are watching these things take place on this earth.
There was a book written by a lady named Laura Hirsch in 2010. It's called The Other Side of Autism. And she followed all the recommended guidelines for her young little boy, and she got the MMR vaccination, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccination for him back, I think in 07 or 08. And so he got the vaccinations and then promptly contracted autism. She went back to the same doctors that gave him the vaccinations. The doctors said, too bad, so sad, we can't do a thing about it. Good luck. And
right.
I think she did sue the vaccinations and win some money, but she wanted answers. She wanted answers and more than money about her child. And so she consulted a bunch of psychics. And President FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, came through, as well as Albert Einstein, who's somebody I talk to all the time. And they all said the same message, Dylan, and you may not be aware of this, that back in 1972, Richard Nixon authorized the secret building of chemical weapons factory throughout the desert of Nevada, outside Winnemucca, and those chemical weapons factories are still operating now, and they produce anthrax and botulism and all kinds of horrible things, and they're stockpiled for possible future use. And this has been going on for like 50, 60 years. In that factory and in those storage areas, a lot of botulism and anthrax escapes. Every once in a while, they have accidents. And instead of killing off people in the facility, which is underground, they let it in the atmosphere. And that blows up to the potato-producing fields of eastern Oregon, eastern Washington, Idaho, which is the main area for producing potatoes for the United States and in North America. And so those tuber crops are like sponges, and they get in this anthrax and botulism and everything. And when little kids eat French fries at a fast food place, the interaction of the MMR vaccination with those leftover chemicals, which are illegal, by the way, banned by the UN Treaty in 1972, when they ingest those potatoes with those trace elements of those horrible diseases from those weapons factories, and something in the MMR vaccination triggers autism. And that's what she was told. And so it often happens with the first vaccination, but certainly by the second one. And she said that's why the autism rates have gone from 1 in 10,000 in 1996 to something like 1 in 44 for girls. You probably know a lot more than I do, and 1 in 22 yeah. or 23 for boys. Would love your comments on that, and I can get you the book and send it to you if you like.
Well, it's a fascinating theory. I certainly do have done a lot of research into vaccines and their connection to autism. Of course, that's what puts me into the position I'm in. I, made a documentary, Vaxxed, about the whistleblower at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They came forward and said that, they hid the correlation between vaccines and autism, specifically that MMR vaccine and autism, from the public during a study between 2000 and 2004. I've interviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of parents that tell stories of receiving that vaccine or sometimes other vaccines like the DTaP vaccine, and their child regressing into autism. My legal team has sued government agencies over this issue. In fact, we won a lawsuit against the CDC because they say that no vaccines cause autism. You know, if you go to the website, it says vaccines do not cause autism. So we asked, we use Freedom of Information Act requests for them to show the scientific evidence that they had that for the first six vaccines given in the first 6 months of life, which include hepatitis B, HIB, Prevnar 13, polio vaccine, the DTaP vaccine. We wanted the scientific evidence and the studies that have been done to show that those vaccines do not contribute to autism, since they say they don't. And they fought us, and we eventually won a lawsuit where we forced them to give us a list. And they gave us a list of 20 studies, and none of the vaccines we were discussing were really addressed in those 20 studies. Simply put, they cannot make that statement. And so vaccines really, and when you see the increase in the use of vaccines, you see this increase in autism. They run right together as far as the curve goes. Now, do French fries play a part of that? I haven't looked at that specific discussion, but I will say that in my investigation of autism, I think our understanding now is really that autism is just simply children that cannot detoxify fast enough, or methylate is what we call it. So when we have heavy metals in our bodies are really good at processing that, collecting it through macrophage and things, and then rushing it out of our system. Well, we are seeing genetic issues in children with autism that lack certain genes that help with that process of methylation. So it is possible that, as you've said, toxic chemicals that could very well just be as easily delivered through pesticides or herbicides in those farms, or maybe it's traveling up from another facility, as you've described. I also, you know, we know now that these are the most toxic mothers that are giving birth that we've ever seen. I think many reports have shown 270 different chemicals in very disturbing concentrations in the umbilical cords of mothers. So all of these things contribute. And really, I think autism is just simply once a child gets it, it boils over, right? It gets over the top. So it very well could be toxic chemicals in our food. I believe vaccinations are just a perfect delivery system to push the immune system over the edge, especially one that cannot get these chemicals out of their body. So I'm open to reading that book. I don't know that specific connection. I do know, and I don't think that vaccines are the only way that we see autism. I have met parents that had a fluorescent light bulb fall in the house, shatter on the floor, you know, child breathed it and then started exhibiting and regressed into autism.
Sure.
So I think there's a lot of different ways. And again, was it just that bulb? Probably not. We probably had a child that was already very highly toxic with a lot of different elements, and the mercury from that bulb just pushed it over the top, and then the bathtub overflowed, essentially brain swelling. And that's what I want to be clear about autism, really. You know, I had a mother really clearly say this to me last year. She says, vaccines don't cause autism. They're right when they say that. She had an autistic child herself. She said, vaccines don't cause autism. Autism is a behavior. A vaccine doesn't cause a behavior. Vaccines cause encephalopathy or encephalitis, swelling of the brain. And after the brain swells, the resulting behavior could be schizophrenia or other different issues, maybe just ADD, ADHD. One of those behaviors is autism. So she said, the truth is vaccines cause brain swelling. And we know this. A vaccine is designed to cause inflammation in the body. That's how they make your immune system work. So it only stands to reason that certain children, the body is not able to stop that swelling and it gets to the brain. There are top scientists right now at Kennedy Krieger, one Dr. Zimmerman, who used to appear in court against parents claiming the vaccines cause their autism. He has now done extensive science and has changed his mind and says clearly vaccines can cause autism in some children. He has described the pathway as being children who have a mitochondrial disorder. Your mitochondria are the energy of the cells. If they don't have strong enough energy, the body can't fight the inflammation that's taking place and slow it down so it doesn't reach the brain, and so it goes straight to the brain. So the science of what you're saying exists. You know, is it a direct pathway from a facility, as you described it, that has botulism or other things like that, I'd be interested in looking at it again. I mean, we should be doing science. We should be testing. We're not doing any data collection. We're not doing any studies or science looking at these facts. So we're stuck in a world of really a lot of theory and hypothesis. But that leads me to the major thing that I request then is where there's an absence of science, you can't claim safety. And that's what they're doing. What Stanley Plotkin, one of the biggest vaccine designers, says is where there's an absence of science, I assume safety. Can you imagine if that's how we go with this COVID-19 vaccine? Let's just not study it. Let's not see if we've overcome problems of immune enhancement, which killed the animals in the animal trials. It's like sticking your head in the sand, right? It's like a little kid closing his eyes and saying, you can't see me. This is how science is working, and we need to change that.
Right. One thing I've never understood, Dell, and I'd love your comment on this, is that they provide a lot of immunity for the manufacturers like Big Pharma and producing vaccine, people like Bill Gates. With all these problems with these vaccines, I would think there's no incentive for them to produce a vaccine that doesn't have problems. If they have complete liability, why bother? Even the liability court back in D.C. for parents, it's highly restricted, and I believe from what I've read that us U.S. taxpayers actually paid the damages for the poor families that have had kids have autism and other problems from bad vaccines. So I don't know why there's a legal justification or a public policy reason for shielding these manufacturers, because like an article I read the other day, Dale, said that Bill Gates is doing all kinds of things. He wants nanobots in this new vaccine for the coronavirus, so people can be tracked. And he's got no liability. He can put anything he wants in the vaccines. Absolutely no liability. I think it's time for us as American people and our Congress to take away that shield for them. There's no public policy basis for it. I'd love your comments on that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There is no liability, which, you know, when I tell friends that right up front, you know, that, you know, vaccines can injure, and they say, well, I mean, they all say it's safe and effective. And I say, do you realize that there's no liability? It's virtually the only product in America that you cannot sue the manufacturer if it injures you or your children or kills you. You can't sue the hospital or the doctor or even the drugstore that injected you with the flu shot. They're completely indemnified. And my friends will say, well, doesn't that prove right there that they must injure some people if they have to be protected? And that's what happened. Ronald Reagan was blackmailed in 1986 by the pharmaceutical industry. They said, we're going to stop making all vaccines unless you protect us from liability. Why did they say that? Because as they described it, we're losing money on the vaccine program. We are having so many lawsuits for death and injury for this sector of our industry that we cannot make a profit. You really have to wrap your head around that. This, you know, even drugs like Vioxx or OxyContin make a fortune, though people are suing and winning cases, they still make a fortune. So these products were even worse than those, right? They were so bad they couldn't make a profit. And so Ronald Reagan reluctantly passed the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. I absolutely agree that if vaccines are so great and they're so good for us, and if, as Tony Fauci and so many scientific pundits say, that vaccine injury is one in a million, well, if it's really one in a million, certainly this billion-dollar industry can afford the lawsuit from one in a million people that get it. I think that this is what flies in the face of reality when we start seeing the actual injuries from vaccines. And we have some ways to document that. I want to point to VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. What we know is this is the system where if you are injured by a vaccine, if you have a heart attack right after getting a vaccine, or you have paralysis like Guillain-Barré syndrome right after a vaccine, your doctor is supposed to report that. Or if your child has brain swelling and starts screaming, and you see that the brain is swelling in the child, those are all supposed to be reported to VAERS. Well, in 2018, which is the last report we've seen, when they say vaccine injury is one in a million, well, there were 60,000 reports of vaccine injury in 2018 alone in the United States of America. Roughly 500 deaths were reported from vaccination in the United States of America in that 1 year. 5,000, I believe, emergency room visits and permanent disabilities. So that's much worse than one in a million, but it gets worse than that. Harvard Medical School was hired by the CDC to investigate the VAERS system to see how efficient it is at capturing these injuries. And what they discovered and reported was that VAERS appears to be capturing less than 1% of the total amount of injuries. That means that the 500 deaths could very well be 50,000 deaths, and that the 60,000 injuries would be 6 million injuries in the United States of America alone. So that now, when you think about that level of injury for a product that is totally liability free, we need to remove the 1986 Act. But the COVID-19 vaccine has an even stronger protection called the PREP Act, which is a part of the Affordable Care Act, and that was put in there. The PREP Act indemnifies everybody. I mean, for anything. Basically, and you said, why do we do this? They treat these situations like they're an emergency, that the entire childhood vaccine program is an emergency. Therefore, it doesn't have the time to go through proper safety studies, to be tested against placebos. And since we're rushing it past and onto the market, we can't hold the manufacturer responsible, since there is a chance people will die. It's exactly what's going on with COVID-19. AstraZeneca is demanding right now that Belgium, it's one of the holdouts. Many countries have passed acts like the PREP Act to protect this COVID-19 vaccine from any liability. If it kills or injures any of us, they won't be held responsible. Wow. AstraZeneca is demanding that Belgium protect them. And Belgium says, that's shocking. Why would we do that? Your product should work. And they have said, because we can't be held responsible for injuries, autoimmune diseases that take place 3 or 4 years down the road, since our trials will never have lasted that long. This is what America and citizens around the world really need to wake up to.
I know this question is not politically correct, but I know you believe in freedom of speech, so I want to ask it, Del. Why should we even have a vaccine when countries like Taiwan, Mexico, and Sweden never shut down? They've had hardly any COVID cases. Their economies are doing great. And it's going away there. And actually, I think the numbers of so-called COVID-19 cases here in the United States and elsewhere, those, it's interesting, isn't it, how those numbers allegedly have gone up now as we get closer to the U.S. election on November 4th. And in my own home state of Washington State, our governor here has he said he would end the restrictions on closing businesses and masks and social distancing and all this other stuff on November 5th, one day after the elections on November 4th. It's the first time in, I think, humanity's history where a disease follows the election cycle, whether you're voting for Republican or Democrat. So I think this has been politicized. I don't believe the figures. I know a lot of government officials, notably our governor here in Washington State, has been caught in not telling the truth at different news conferences projecting false numbers for the virus. I mean, I've heard credible stories of hospitals, for example, a fellow dies in a motorcycle accident, and they list the death as from the COVID-19, because the hospital itself gets $39,000, money that they don't get from the federal government if they don't list it as a COVID death. So a lot of it's fear basis, which I think it makes it worse for that. But why even have a vaccine for the virus if other countries have never shut down and they've got like herd immunity? I'd love your opinion on that.
I believe this is really the agenda of the pandemic, and it was an agenda set before this virus was ever discussed. Sure. We look at Event 201 held last year, where they all, all the leaders from the World Health Organization and different health departments around the world got together like a Dungeons and Dragons game and ran through a scenario at which a virus sweeps the planet. There's a vaccine that's a year away. They had fake news stories that looked just like the ones we're having now. They gamed all of this out ahead of time, which again, Plandemic, the film that's out right now, Plandemic Indoctrination, lays out so clearly. If you have any questions about how these things come together, I think that film really did a nice job of putting it together. But I have been saying for several years as I travel the country, and very loudly last year, everywhere I stood on a stage, that the pharmaceutical industry is about to attempt to take over the world, is going to take over the governments of the world. I said, I've warned that I believe there's going to be some sort of pandemic. I thought it might be something more dangerous like Ebola, but that Ebola will get into America somehow, or a virus will get into the nations of the world. And in order to stop it, they will tell us that we need to have a vaccine, and that vaccine will usher in a new world where the adults, not just the children, are forcibly vaccinated by government mandate, and not with just one vaccine, not just the COVID-19 vaccine, or what I was saying a year ago might have been an Ebola vaccine or a Zika vaccine, but with the vaccines that your children got that you didn't get. Remember, in 1986, before that, if you were born before 1986, you had at best 11 vaccines by the time you're 18. Your children are getting 54 vaccines and 72 doses. So imagine what that catch-up schedule in every adult is worth. At $50 to $100 a pop, 340 million Americans now being forcibly injected. We're talking about turning a $1 billion industry into a $1 trillion industry. Now think about the fact that there's 270 vaccines that are already in the approval process, having made it through the trials that you've never heard of, and thousands upon thousands of vaccine trials going on, having nothing to do with COVID-19. The future of the pharmaceutical industry, the most powerful industry in the world, the most powerful lobby in Washington that's outspending oil and gas, their future is vaccines, a product that doesn't properly get tested for safety, so they didn't have to spend the money on R&D, a product that they don't have to advertise because the government forces it upon you. And all they have to do is buy your next president, buy your next congressman, buy your next senator, give them enough money to be elected. That's what's going on here. So it has nothing to do. We don't need a COVID-19 vaccine. 99.74% of us have an immune system that is wiping this thing out dead. Most of us don't even know we have it. That's how good our immune system is at beating it. 99.74%, only 0.26% of the population that are extremely sick already are dying from COVID-19. There has never been a vaccine anywhere on this planet that has an efficacy rate of 99.74%. Our own bodies are doing better than this vaccine will ever dream of doing. So you're right. We don't need it. All it can do is make us more sick. It cannot make us more healthy because we're already extremely healthy when it comes to this illness.
Well, I love your common sense still. And it's so refreshing to hear you talk about that. What do you think I don't know of anybody who's gotten sick from the virus where I live. We have about a quarter of a million people here in the county where, from Olympia, Washington in Thurston County and on the West Coast. And there was one alleged COVID death in March or April.
Yeah.
I think it was March. And the fellow was 80 years old and he had congestive heart failure. Yet they listed it as a COVID death. That's it. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Yeah. And we shut down with the county still shut down. Many places are shut down and people are asking why. And during this shutdown, our governor has allowed big box stores, not to criticize Walmart or Home Depot, but they would have been allowed to open with little small businesses. Not. Why is it that a little business with three or four or five people is a greater threat than a big box store that has thousands of people walking through its doors every day? If the problem is large, is having large crowds and somebody infected, then why are these big box stores being allowed to continue their operations and to wipe out little businesses? A lot of places now are just simply boarded up. They're gone. Little restaurants have been in family for generations, totally gone. And you know, if you give somebody what, $1,200 like the government did, which was nice a couple months ago, I'm not knocking it, but I'm saying that's not going to bring back a family-based business. I'm sorry. It just can't do it.
No.
All those years of work.
Yeah, well, let me take this opportunity because I have to actually move on here in a minute and do another interview that's coming in. But okay. So I want to say this, that this is why the anti-vaccine or the vaccine hesitancy movement or the health freedom movement is growing exponentially. It's why my show, The High Wire, has gained millions of viewers just over the last few months around the world. Because for anybody with working brain cells, none of this makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
You know, when you wear your mask into a restaurant or they tell you, you know, I went into a restaurant in Utah. I was just, you know, at a march in Utah and I walked in for breakfast in a restaurant. I wasn't wearing my mask. The host was, he says, I'm sorry, sir, you have to put on your mask. I said, why? He said, well, because, you know, I said, I see people all sitting here. We've all done this, right? all sitting in every booth. In fact, that booth 5 feet away without a mask. He's like, right, you have to wear the mask to the booth. I said, how far away is my booth? And he said, well, it's just right over there. He pointed 20 feet away. I said, can you explain to me your understanding of the science of this that makes it dangerous for me to not wear a mask here, but 20 feet away, the virus will stay over there while I'm breathing, that we're not currently breathing air coming from all the mouths in this restaurant? Right. You see, that's critical thinking. And that's what is going to save us. It's unfortunate that there is an incredible body of people that just won't entertain or answer that question inside of themselves. But none of this is making any sense. This is, and as you pointed out, I just want to very quickly lay out to people before I go. I believe this is a bad cold. I think it's worse than your average coronavirus. It's a little bit worse. It'd be like a bad flu season. But I don't believe that is anywhere near where we should be destroying our economy, destroying the nation, destroying our ability to manufacture, destroying our jobs, our livelihoods, sending ourselves into depression, sending ourselves into starvation. And I want to be really clear about that, that there are so many reasons that we could have had a lower death rate. As you've said, everything is being called a COVID-19 death. The death certificates are demanding. They rewrote them and told doctors, even if you only have an assumption and you didn't test a person, just go ahead and write that they died from COVID-19. So under those circumstances, we're at about 160,000, 170,000 deaths right now. That's a lot of people. And people say, are you telling me that didn't really happen? I want to very quickly lay out for your listeners how you take essentially a common cold, which is what the coronavirus was, and you murder enough people to make us all panic to take away our rights. Here's how you do it. Number one, you call the usual coronavirus or the cold novel. That was the statement made coming out of Europe by the Imperial Model and the WHO. This is a novel coronavirus, which means our bodies have never seen it before. Every other coronavirus since the dawn of man is not novel because we know you carry cross-reactive T cells. Just like most people recognize, if you've had the measles as an adult, you can never get the measles again. If you had the flu last year, you usually don't get the flu this year because you have immunity that's long-lasting. That is the truth for all coronavirus, but they called it novel, meaning it doesn't matter that you had a previous coronavirus. This one won't recognize it. Everybody can get sick. So that's lie number one. You change the standard by which you refer to this cold. Number two, you say that this novel virus is deadly, more deadly than the other coronaviruses that were before. This is proved to not necessarily be true. And people say, well, how do we have such high numbers? I'm going to get into that. You say it's deadly, which changes your protocol on how you deal with the common cold. So normally when we would go into a hospital for people that are older, that do die of common colds, they do die of the flu when you have really bad heart disease, when you have really bad COPD, we have really bad diabetes, end-stage cancer. And by the way, that's the description of, you know, the about 80% of the people that are dying of this illness. But what you do is, when you go into the hospital, normally we would give you oxygen. You say, I'm having trouble breathing. We give you oxygen if this was any regular cold, but we didn't do that. You see, we don't give you oxygen because an oxygen mask can aerosolize. This is the story they told us, aerosolize this deadly virus and spread it throughout the hospital. So we're not going to give you oxygen. So right there, we're immediately not treating you the way we normally would when you have a cold. Instead, we deny you oxygen. And doctors and nurses are describing, we stand there and we don't give you anything. And we put you in a bed and we wait till you crash. At the moment you crash, then we use a ventilator. We don't give you a ventilator right away because we have to put you into a coma to use a ventilator. Wow. So now that you've crashed, we put you in a coma. We use drugs like propofol that killed Michael Jackson. All of these things are how we treated this differently. Then we cut the amount of beds we had in half by only using ICUs. All of these things have contributed to the death rate. While we're also bloating the numbers, we are not treating the cold the way we normally would. And as we all now know, 9 out of 10 people were on ventilators. So when Andrew Cuomo was screaming, ventilators, ventilators, I need more ventilators, we should look back historically and think he might as well have said, guillotines, guillotines, I need more guillotines, because that's what happened. We murdered people with ventilators. That's why our numbers are high. And lastly, hydroxychloroquine is shown to be effective by 78 international studies. Multiple scientists and doctors are using it to success. Not one doctor has stepped forward and said, my patient died because of hydroxychloroquine, yet hundreds, if not thousands, are saying hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc cured 98% of my patients. And Ford Medical Center showed those that got hydroxychloroquine had half the death rate. So cut our death rate in half from 170 down to 85,000. That's about the flu season of 2018, and we are not locked down. This is an agenda. It's a lie, and it is being used to implement tracking, control, forced vaccinations, all of the destruction of this great country, the United States of America, and any democratic nation or republic around the world. Thank you so much for your time.
Dale, I absolutely love your comments, and I'm so happy you came on my show. Could you give your website, please, for people could look?
Please, everybody, go to thehighwire.com. If anything I've said strikes a pulse and you say, you know what, that sounds really interesting. If you watch The High Wire, we provide all of the documents, science, and evidence that prove the point. If you've seen here today, I can talk about hypotheses, but I only stand behind science I can prove. The High Wire has been delivering that the whole time. So go to thehighwire.com, sign up to our email list, because we're being censored on YouTube. Facebook may cut us at any moment. Our YouTube channel is taken down. Twitter. I always want to be able to let people know where to find us. So sign up for that newsletter. No one else will see it. I'm not selling you anything. I'm just going to tell you when we have a breaking story. Ted, thank you so much for your time and your audience. I appreciate it.
All the U.S. presidents are very proud of you. Thank you, Dale, for coming on my show today. Really
thank you
appreciate
very much.
Your work. All right,
take
my
care.
Friend. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Will do.
Bye.
「光る星」